This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. More today on Mayor Marty Walsh's decision to accept and adopt all of the recommendations made by the Boston Police Reform Task Force. Among the recommendations, a new diversity and inclusion unit, an independent civilian oversight office with subpoena power, more police body camera usage. Now, yesterday we heard from a member of the task force. Today we will get reaction from a reformer and from the president of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association. We begin with Shigun Itowu. He's the executive director at the Black Economic Council of Massachusetts and co-founder of the Boston Police Camera Action Team. Shigun, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I just want to start by asking you for your reactions to the recommendations from the task force.
Well, you know, we, at BPCAT were extremely hopeful and happy with the recommendations that the task force put together. You know, everybody who was on that task force put in so many volunteer hours to talk to members of the community, both who have had negative experiences with police officers, but also who have been advocating for a lot of these issues for now decades. So we were happy to see that they took the bold step to ensure that everybody's voice was recognized in that report and had no shame or fear of putting that on the mayor's desk and saying, now the ball is in your court to actualize all these things.
So the ball is in his court now, and he embraced all the recommendations yesterday, set essentially a timeline of 180 days for implementation. Are you optimistic that all of the recommendations will happen and in that time frame?
Well, you know, I don't want to get ahead of that actual time frame. So I will be happy to come back on the show in 180 days to share, you know, whether or not, we've actually stuck to that timeline. I mean, you know, of course, I'm grateful that the mayor has embraced all of these recommendations, has not tried at all to wiggle out of doing certain recommendations and committing to others. But, you know, I'm also very, at least at BPCAT, we're very used to press conferences and commitments to making things come about. I mean, it was several years ago that the commitment was made to equip every officer with a body camera. And unfortunately, that had to be another recommendation in this report because it hadn't happened yet. So, we are hopeful that we will, meet that timeline. We're cautiously optimistic, I guess, is the short answer to that question.
So let's stay that with for a second longer. Where are overall the pressure points or the pain points that you might anticipate as an activist and a reformer in getting all these recommendations implemented?
Well, I think one of the major pain points is coming after this conversation. We don't yet know where the police unions stand on these reform measures. We don't know what the internal issues may be to actualizing all of these recommendations. Of course, you know, at BPCAT, and I'm sure those on the task force stand at the ready to work with the mayor and others to, make sure these things come about. But I think the greatest struggle will be with ensuring that the unions are in favor of these reform measures and not blocking these needed reform measures as they did when we were simply trying to bring about body cameras that their own membership supported. But we're hopeful, we're looking forward to the conversation after this to hear that that they're going to support this as much as the mayor does.
And I think you're referring to the conversation I'll be having with the head of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association as soon as you and I are done speaking, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so former city councilor Charles Yancey, he spent more than three decades pushing for a police oversight board, and he called these recommendations a baby step toward what he had envisioned. He expressed a couple of worries, one that the board won't be truly independent from the police department or city hall, since all of the appointees of an oversight board would be made by the mayor. And he also said there would be real challenges to leadership if, as you've mentioned, the police unions refuse to cooperate. I want to talk about this piece about appointments in particular. Can an oversight body that's appointed exclusively by the mayor enforce appropriately in your mind and get implementation done?
This is the conversation we're having on a macro level in the city as well when it comes to things like the school committee even. Where folks are indicating or arguing that a body that is completely appointed by a singular entity cannot truly be independent. And so, you know, I would say that Councillor Yancey, who I have the deepest respect for, and you're right, has been pushing for this for decades, is correct that, you know, the mayor having all the power, and I should, you know, note that this is not a Mayor Walsh thing, but thinking of the office itself, being able to appoint all of the members of this body, you know, can be concerning. And so, you know, I think that the what Councillor Yancey had pushed for was at least making sure that the city council also has the ability to make appointments to this board so that there's shared power there. And of course, you know, I'm sure the councillor would be open to elected positions on such a body as well to ensure that true democracy is alive on this independent body.
Shigen, transparency and accountability are themes that are sounded kind of throughout these recommendations. In particular, the task force recommended that the police proactively track and publish data on success of the implementation on outcomes rather than responding to information requests, for example. As someone who's thought in this area for a while and been engaged in activism for a number of years, what kind of specific information would you like to see available and tracked?
So, you know, one of the things that folks have been pushing for is, you know, racial data, gender data. We want to know who you're stopping, how many times, in what areas of the city, things like that. I think are going to be critical to our understanding just of policing overall and how that happens, but then also, you know, using that data to define what the solutions are to addressing any disparities that exist. I know that, you know, groups like the ACLU and others have been pushing for that. So we'll hope that that's embedded in the data that they determine they're going to collect.
And what should the outcome of that data be? You know, accountability implies not only the transparency of information, but then either consequences or rewards, depending on where the data comes out. What do you want to see there?
Well, you know, one thing that was not in the task force report was one of the major cries from protesters in the street. I mean, I was at all the protests, and at all of them, people were calling for defunding, which was, you know, taking away money from certain parts of the police department and investing it in the community. And so for me, when I'm thinking of the data that we're collecting, you know, I want to also see how many of these stops were mental health, you know, calls and responses, how many of them, you know, were actually for something violent, because I think that data allows us to also shape, you know, how much money do we need to invest in more police officers versus investing that in mental health care workers to respond to situations. So, you know, those are the things that I'd like to see the data being applied to. And to your point about consequences and things of that nature, you know, yes, you know, it's going to be important that we're holding people accountable for their missteps and for abuse of power. You know, for me, the reward for officers for doing their job is what all of us get at the end of the week, which is our paycheck and the knowledge of doing our job well. But, you know, again, those are all the things I'm thinking about for how we're using that data appropriately to respond to what that the masses of people have been calling for, which is not just the reform measures that, again, you know, we're happy that have been embraced, but the fact that we are shifting investment to community programs.
I do want to note, too, Shigen, that the task force did include some language saying, for example, quote, the city should identify, strengthen, and expand services that appropriately serve and support the BPD in shifting responsibility in responding to instances involving persons experiencing homelessness, substance use, mental health, end quote. So there is a little there. So just briefly, last question for you. What most encourages you from these recommendations?
Well, for me, it's who informed the recommendations that was important for me. So the fact that you had folks like Darren Howell and Jamal Crawford, you know, Jeffrey Brown, et cetera, involved in shaping these recommendations, for me, was a step forward in terms of how someone in the position of mayor uses their position. Oftentimes, we see some of the same folks who are helping to make these decisions, or really just putting a rubber stamp on what an elected official wants. And so For me, the overall important piece of this was in who was making the decisions, who was informing, what the next step should be. And then, again, the mayor deciding to embrace all of these reforms and not trying to find a way to not do so. So for me, those were the positive things. The reform is important, but as all advocates know, the work is not yet done. So even though these reform measures have been embraced, this isn't it. There are other things that need to happen to ensure we have a responsible and accountable police department.
That is Shigan Itowu, Executive Director at the Black Economic Council of Massachusetts and co-founder of the Boston Police Camera Action Team. Shigan, thanks.
Thank you.
So let's turn now to the president of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association, Larry Calderoni. He's been with the Boston Police since 1994, joins us on the, over the line today. Larry Calderoni, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me, Zoe. I appreciate the time on the air, and I'd like to say hello to my friend Shigan. We've had some past interaction together, so if he's still listening, I'd like to say hi to him as well.
That's great. And I, you were talking with Zoe a minute ago. This is Tiziana now, and I'm glad that you were able to hear Shigun's comments there. It gives us a basis for talking a little more about these reforms. I'm glad to have you, and I want to start by asking you what the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association makes of the recommendations.
I apologize about having the name wrong. I'm sorry.
No, not at all. Listen, don't worry about it at all. I'm going to ask you the same question I started with Shigan, which is your overall reaction to the recommendations.
Well, I have a hard time commenting on the overall recommendation because we don't really have a background of knowledge in anything that took place in the backroom conversations, the open air conversations. We were only involved once with the committee. And that was an online dialogue that they had that was open to the public. So we don't know too much about all of the requests that are here. For some reason, the union did not have a seat at the table, and we're looking at creating reforms or a change in the way that we can make policing better. The Patrolmen's Association is all about making policing better. We believe we're one of the best in the nation already. I keep referring to President Obama's accolades back in 2015 that look no further than the city of Boston when you want to learn how community policing's done. So our men and women on the street are doing a great job every day. But if there's a better way to do it, we're open to that conversation. We're just a little disheartened that we weren't included from the onset. So I can't really make an educated or concise comment on these so-called reforms because we don't have any basis of knowledge for them.
So I want to come back in a minute to the question about inclusion in the process. The recommendations from yesterday aren't substantially different than the draft recommendations that were released earlier in September, around mid-September. I'm assuming that you have seen those, and so maybe we can go back and ask what the reactions were to the draft recommendations that came out about a month ago.
Yeah, we can talk about the draft recommendations, certainly. Unfortunately, I have to tell you that I have not received any answers to some of the questions that we put forth. Like they talk about this new OPAT panel with investigatory and subpoena powers.
But one of the general Office of Policing Accountability and Transparency, just for our listeners so they know what you mean by OPAT. Please go ahead.
Yeah. To this day, I still don't know what kind of investigators they're going to hire, what their background is, what their experience is. You talk about subpoena power. No one can tell me if they're attorneys, if they're schooled, what the educational level is. We have no information to go by, so it would be inappropriate for
what
me to make comments.
What would you like to see there? Yeah, so what would you like to see there, Officer Calderoni?
Oh, I'd like to see experienced law enforcement personnel doing the background and investigations, people that know what policing is all about on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis. It's hard to put civilian personnel in a position of such an enormous amount of power to say that they're going to investigate complaints that come in sometimes anonymously and give them the ability to perform investigations behind the scenes and not know what their experience level is. You look at it like this. I take a lot of common sense approaches to it. If your refrigerator is broken, you're not calling the electrician to come figure out why the AC unit isn't pumping. So why are we doing that with policing?
Well, you know, so there's repair and then there's oversight. I do think reasonable people might argue that we have a number of other professions where oversight includes not only members of the profession, but others who are affected by the profession and should have a voice in that oversight as well. Any thoughts or reaction to that?
Yeah, actually, I agree with you probably 99.9% there. When you look at the Bar of Attorneys that oversee attorneys that practice law, that panel is made up predominantly of people in the field, that being attorneys. When you look at the medical profession that oversees practicing physicians, it's made up of over 70% doctors on the panel. So again, why are we treating police officers differently? It seems punitive to me. It looks like there's an axe to grind from, as was said earlier, negative experiences with police officers. Undoubtedly, people have had negative experiences with police officers. We understand that. However, that doesn't mean that we should punish everyone and paint them with the same brush. The men and women of the Boston Police Department do an outstanding job every day on the street.
So there's a lot more I know that we could talk about there, but there are a number of other things I want to make sure I get to with you, Officer Calderoni. I want to ask, there were two officers on the task force, Eddie Crispin of the Boston Police Department, and he's president of MAMLEO, which is the Massachusetts Association of Minority Law Enforcement Officers, and Superintendent Dennis White, who's the chief of staff of the BPD. You expressed some concern that there was insufficient representation or understanding of the police perspective on the task force. Did you not feel that those two officers could represent the interests of police in those discussions?
Well, let me be clear, first off, because it didn't sound like your answer was the same as mine, respectfully. To start with, Sergeant Eddie Crispin and Superintendent White, both excellent officers, friends of mine, exemplary of what you would want in policing today. If you dial 911 or if a loved one in my house dialed 911, I would want both of those officers to show up, just to tell you how great I think both of them are. But my point that I was making earlier was, the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association, the union that represents the 1,600-odd police officers, the men and women on the street every day, we did not have a voice at the table. And when I hear the rhetoric that seems to always dominate conversation, that if the union doesn't stand in the way, if the union doesn't hinder progress, it's pretty hard to point the finger at the union when we don't even have a seat at the table. Some input would be appreciated. As you can hear the frustration in my voice, it's downright disrespectful. How can people say that the union is hindering progress when we don't even have a voice at the table? We don't even know what's being discussed.
Did you specifically request the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association, did you specifically request to meet with the task force, or did the task force reach out to you?
At no point in time did the task force reach out to us, nor did we seek out the task force, no.
Okay. I want to talk about the body camera issue for a minute. You were reacting a minute ago to both the conversation we had with Shigun Itowo just before, and he has been active on body cameras for police, as well as, I think, that sort of the broader conversation there. I know you know that people are watching and wondering how the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association is going to react to the recommendations around body cameras. The union sued the city over the original policy. This would increase body camera usage. Do you plan to counter the new recommendations as well, and are the courts a piece of that for the union?
Well, it's kind of a multifaceted question you have, so bear with me. First off, when the past union leadership went to court over the body cameras, I was not part of the past union leadership that did go to court, so I can't sit here and second guess what they did. I'm going to have to sit here as the new union president and support them in the direction that they went, but not pretend to know what was really behind it. And as far as the new body cameras or the extension of body cameras coming out, our experience has been so far that the body cameras exonerate more officers than not. It seems to us on the street that more often when body camera footage is downloaded and viewed is that the offender seems to be proven to be doing something that he or she should not be, to say it in a professional way, and the accusations tend to be false against the officer. And what's really bothersome to that is that no one is ever charged with filing a false police report. No one is ever charged with making false claims against the officer. And once again, this is somebody who's experienced some type of negativity by meeting with the police, and their first reaction is to file a false claim, thus trying to hurt the officer professionally. And it's just not right. People that are filing claims against police officers, they should be held to the same standard as everyone else. You file a false claim, which is a crime, you should be charged and prosecuted.
So thank you. That actually gets to a question I might have asked. I think you've just answered it about recommendations you might have wanted to see that weren't there. We're running out of time now. I want to thank you. Larry Calderoni is the president of the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association. I want to thank you for taking the time today, and I hope that you will come back and talk with us again as we continue to follow this issue.
Always. I'd be delighted. Thank you for the time.
Appreciate the time.